Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today we are fortunate to have with us Megan Freed, who is the co-founder of Freed Marcroft, a firm that specializes in matrimonial and family law. A graduate of Western New England College of Law, Megan is making a difference in the law community of Hartford and beyond. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So why don't you start out by telling us about how you came to discover law was going to be the path you would take?
Well, when I graduated from Mount Holyoke College, and I, you know, had a wonderful liberal arts degree, and I didn't exactly have a job. And so I went to work for a state rep in Massachusetts, and she was housed in the Judiciary Committee. And I was surrounded by lawyers. Everyone was a lawyer. All the staff was lawyers. The reps were lawyers. And going to law school is always something that I had considered, but it definitely spurred me to head directly to law school. So about 2 years off from college, and then I realized that I loved the way these people thought and that I wanted to have the same educational background as they did.
And as you were making the decision to pursue law school, what stirred up your confidence that you could indeed take it on?
Oh, I was 19. I thought I could do anything. No, I wasn't 19. I was 23, and I thought I could do anything. I didn't need my confidence stirred up.
There you go, especially because you went to Mount Holyoke, so that gave you some confidence initially.
Right.
And so when you got into law school and you began to pursue the path of law, what did you discover that you loved the most?
Oh, I loved writing. And I also, early on in law school, I took a mediation class, and mediation was really in its infancy then, or at least I certainly hadn't been exposed to it. And I thought about the ability to resolve conflicts in a non-litigious way where the parties really had a say in their own fates. And so I was really drawn to that, which wasn't why I went to law school, but became a real influence in how I went on to practice.
And so you ended up working in a corporate law setting, working for Hartford Steam Boiler. What did you learn in the corporate arena that allowed you to weave in mediation or didn't allow you to weave it in?
Yeah. So before I was at Hartford Steam Boiler, I was in two large Connecticut law firms. Well, one large national law firm and one large Connecticut law firm. And my practice there was a much more traditional litigation practice. And when I joined Hartford Steam Boiler as in-house counsel, I actually was the negotiator. So I was managing litigation across the country and was really in charge of resolutions. It was at that point that Hartford Steam Boiler kindly allowed me to go to Harvard's School of Negotiation, so I became a trained negotiator, which is really an art and a science. And it was a wonderful experience to be able to negotiate throughout the country with all kinds of different people and try and create resolutions that everyone chose and not just could live with, but chose.
And when you say that negotiation is an art, what did you discover in that art form called negotiation that gave you the ability to do it?
To leave your ego as far outside the door as you possibly can in order to be focused on expanding the pie and optimizing solutions. So in the room at a table, if someone undermined me because, you know, I was younger than them or a woman or a newer lawyer from out of town, whatever, you know, things they had going on, what was key to my ability to resolve things for my client was to not be offended by that, to try and see the opportunity in what they revealed about their point of view of the world.
And so you say with negotiation, the key is to leave your ego at the door, but isn't that the challenge of negotiating?
Yes. It is both the key and the challenge. And I actually would often, you know, I would have a notebook in front of me and just write ego and make sure that I was making decisions that were based in achieving an optimal outcome and not based in, you know, my emotional reaction to things that were flying at me across the table.
And so you gain expertise and this ability to negotiate, but when you think about that journey of leaving egos at the door, isn't that why people have a hard time to come together?
Yes. And in fact, when I sit as a neutral on cases, which I do in my practice, one of the challenges in that is helping the parties try and see past their ego to what the ultimate outcomes and interests they have are. But it's hard.
And so give an example of how you began to see that in your role as a negotiator.
I think that when you're working for a corporation, I always had the same client, right? And it's easier when you have a corporate client and you know the client's goals. And I was really the mouthpiece of the client. It's lawyer and advocate and negotiator. It's easier to check your ego when you're working in someone else's interests. What's harder is when people are negotiating for something that's really connected to them, for something that's important to them, important to their family, important to their children especially, then ego isn't as clean, right? Ego is really a piece of a deeply held belief. And so it's easier in a business law context to accomplish this, and in a family law context, it's much more challenging.
And so that's interesting that you've been trained as a negotiator, and now you find yourself in a practice that specializes in matrimonial and family law. And when I think about divorce, being able to check the ego at the door seems like the most impossible task. How does your strength as a negotiator weave into your work in family and marital law?
You know, when I left Harford Steam Boiler to found my own firm, I wanted to make sure that people had the same access to legal skill and information in their personal lives as they did in their business lives, right? And one of the tricks in that is everything is more loaded. Everything is harder. Life is very real. It's not about dollars and cents, although they're one of the things that are at play. It's real life decisions, visions of the future that are not going to happen, whether you're the one seeking the divorce or the one who's, you know, having it sought. but I think that one of the things that motivates me to continue along the matrimonial and family law path is that it's more important in that context really than in any other context that people are empowered to shape their own outcomes. It is also harder to be involved in that process. Sometimes you wish you could just, you know, wash your hands of it and outsource it to a decision maker. But the truth is that you're the one that is going to have to live the life that you have actually what is an opportunity to create.
So you said that when you worked in corporate law, you became the mouthpiece of the company and you had an understanding of what the goals were for the company.
Right.
How do you do that when you're working with individuals?
There's a lot of talking. One of the things that happens to people going through a divorce, whether they're the initiator or not, is that there are many stages of emotional process that we go through. It's just human reality. At early stages, we might be angry and want the proverbial pound of flesh. At other stages, you just might want it over with. It's my job to translate the person's core goals and interests that aren't sort of based upon the moment they emotionally find themselves in. And one of the ways we do that is by sharing with people our experience about sort of what they're going through, and that it's their mind might change and that it's okay, and that we're going to try like heck not to lock them into something that they're not ready to be locked into.
And how easy is it for people to find their core goals and beliefs? And isn't it amazing that they might be seeking that in the middle of a divorce?
Yeah, it's a really rough time to be doing it. I mean, it's sort of this, the two things that are happening simultaneously in many ways are at odds with each other. But the truth is that I find people are incredible. In relationships where there are children, many, many people are really able to focus down on the children. And in many cases, both parties, they might not agree necessarily what's best for the kids, but they really do try and keep putting the kids first. And so sort of that focus, in many situations, guides them. Now, of course, we've all heard of situations where people aren't able to keep kids first, and so, you know, it's not that that doesn't happen, but it does happen less frequently in my experience than some people might expect.
We're talking with Megan Fried, who is the co-founder of Fried Marcroft, a firm that specializes in matrimonial and family law, and we'll be back after the break.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal you, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles. is power in the name of Jesus. To break every chain, break every chain, break every chain. Woo! To break every chain, break every chain, break every chain. There is power.
Come on. Come on, you declare it.
There is power in the name of Jesus.
There is power.
There is power
in the name.
In the name of Jesus.
We know where it is to break
every chain.
Break every chain.
Break every chain.
Come on, say it to me.
Break every chain.
Break every chain.
Break every chain, break every chain.
There's an army rising up. There's an army rising up. There's an army.
Talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface. Meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
Welcome back. We're talking with Megan Fried, who is the co-founder of Fried Marcroft, a firm that specializes in matrimonial and family law. Part of what was intriguing was a newsletter article that came out from your firm that's talking about how to deal with divorce in the midst of the holidays. What compelled you to write an article like that from your firm?
One of the things that we're always mindful about, I mean, we're lawyers, we're not mental health professionals, but divorce is this emotional process and in a legal process, and in many ways the emotional process is much more important. And we always try to make sure we leave space in the room for our clients' emotions and make sure that we don't get so focused on the legal process that our clients' emotional needs aren't being taken care of. This is a really hard time of year for people going through a divorce. It's a hard time of year for the parents. It's a really hard time of year for the children. One of the realities that my mental health professional friends explained to me is that anyone going through a divorce, and this is, again, the spouses and the children alike, are facing an uncertain future. They think that their future looks one way, and all of a sudden it looks a different way, and they can't picture that new future. And so we try to make sure that we help people one day at a time, step by step, create that new future. And, you know, humans really create firm futures around holidays, right? I mean, I know what's going to be on the Thanksgiving table. I know what's going to be in my family on the Christmas table. We're ritualistic about side dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have kids and there's going to maybe be a shift in location, maybe one parent won't participate, maybe there are family members that don't know or have to be told, it's a really intimidating situation. And so I thought, well, let me talk to some folks that know more about the emotional side of this and get from them their best ideas about how to make that first holiday a good one.
So one of the first things you say in the article is that people should commit to realistic expectations.
Right.
How do we do that in the middle of a divorce?
So hard. So, yes. Some of the advice that I give is easier said than done, but by
it's logical,
right? It's logical, but by repeating it, hopefully we get there. I think that one of the things that adults try to do is everything for their kids, especially on holidays, and their expectations are never reasonable. It's never going to be ideal. Somebody's going to bake overcook a turkey or. Some aunt or uncle is going to act up at the table. So by reminding ourselves that our expectations have to be reasonable and that we can't overcommit ourselves, and reinforcing that, it gives us a better chance to do it. And part of that is, frankly, making sure that parents take care of themselves, that it's not just all child-focused.
And as adults, we often think that we're going to create this mystical holiday experience for our children where they will fly up to the heavens in the midst of that turkey dinner.
Right.
And really, it's just turkey on the table.
It's a meal.
It's showing up.
That's right. That's right. And enjoying that there is the ritual and that letting the day arrive however the day arrives.
And then another thing you mentioned is the importance of not overloading the calendar. What do you mean by that?
Okay. So one of the things that happens in any family is a bunch of things start to get on the calendar, right? We're going to go ice skating in Bushnell Park. We're going to go see A Christmas Carol. We're going to take the children holiday shopping for grandma. When a family is going through a divorce or a separation, there's a natural tendency to add to the calendar. So I need to make separate visits to relatives on one side that used to be done all together. I need to see this grandmother and that grandmother. Parents also want to create new holiday traditions, but when two parents are doing it, it's just a lot of, the kids are really overscheduled. And so one of the things that we encourage whenever we can is that parents work together to make sure that they both get the time with their kids that they need during the holiday season, but that the children aren't overwhelmed in the process.
And also we recognize that the parents are going through their own thing and they just need some time to sit and rest in the midst of it as well.
They do. Parents need time with friends and family on their own, and a lot of that time without children can actually be very positive and valuable.
I thought one of your good tips was the idea of planning ahead. You're going through a divorce, and you've got to think about what might come up. What did you think about the planning ahead?
Right. So one of the things that you can do is use that calendar. I mean, ideally, we'd be, if your family celebrates Christmas, we'd be trying to plan, you know, right after Thanksgiving, how things are going to go between in that month of December, leading up through. And one of the things that's key about that is it won't just keep the parents sane, but also the kids' schedules are going to be shaken by the holiday season. Children really like to know in advance what's going to happen when. And one of the ways to do it is commit with your co-parent to figuring out what's going to happen when and living up to those commitments with the kids.
One of your other tips was the importance of practicing restraint in the gift giving. And we know that in divorce, financial status is very definitely going to change. What do you say to people about that planning process around gift giving?
Yeah, one of the fears from parents, of course, is that the parent with more financial resources will start to give more exorbitant gifts than the family usually gave. And another, again, it's about coordinating the co-parenting. One of the things that I wrote about in terms of recommendations is to try and focus on activities rather than gifts. So in addition to coordinating, it's going to be, the big gift is a bike this year, and we're both going to give that together from Santa, and then we're going to, rein it in on the rest of the gifts, get a commitment from each other. Also, making memories that might not be as expensive. It's sort of analogous to the new traditions. We don't want to overload children's schedules, but we do want to make sure they get special time with mom and dad. And frankly, no kids are much more likely to say, "Remember that time we went pumpkin picking," than they are, "Remember that time you got me the video game I wanted."
Absolutely true. And then you're talking about the emotional side, about leaving room for the emotion or the sadness.
Yes, right. So that everyone has a chance to recognize that this holiday is different than the last one, and that's okay, that we're all going to come through it as a family.
And so in your journey helping families go through the transition of divorce, how do you weave in other people to help them with this journey? What other supports are needed?
Many, many people benefit from some sort of individualized therapy to help them with their own transition, or frankly, a family therapist who can help parents co-parent, kids know that life is different, but it's not unstable. And some families need more co-parenting assistance than other families, but a structure of making sure that you call in the right experts for the right topics is really important. There's nothing wrong with a person not knowing how to go through this transition on their own. There are people that can help you. And another thing, frankly, is taking care of yourself is really hard during this type of emotional journey. I mean, whether you're during the holidays, we all have a hard time exercising and eating well. That's not what's really, going on in a lot of our lives. But it's particularly so for people who are really having emotional turmoil. And remembering to exercise, remembering to eat well, spending time with friends and family in a healthy environment. One of the things that, is a really consistent tip that mental health professionals give is don't overindulge in alcohol during the holidays. It will exacerbate all of the problems and it won't allow you the frame of reference to make better decisions.
We're talking with Megan Fried, who is the co-founder of Fried Marcroft Law Firm here in the Hartford area, and we'll be back after the break. You have been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches.
Ahoy, ye mateys! Now I know you probably think a pirate like me with a peg leg and an eye patch is in search of me buried treasure, but 'tis not so, me mateys. My brave crew and I have pledged to plunder no more until we clean up all the garbage that comes out here from land. Why, just today, I found an aluminum can that said soda pop from the mountaintop. Somebody probably threw it on the ground and it washed into a drain pipe and into a river and into the ocean. Now I've got the best crew in the seven seas.
Hooray!
But we can't do it all ourselves.
No, not on our own.
Lend us a hand by always recycling and disposing of your trash properly. To learn more about keeping oceans clean, visit keepoceansclean.org. Tarnation. I mean, keepoceansclean.org.
What? That's keepoceansclean.org.
Yeah, what he said. Brought to you by the Keep Oceans Clean Alliance and the Ad Council.
Regards collect like old friends. Here to relive your darkest moments. I can see no way, I can see no way. And all of the ghouls come out to play. That every demon wants his pound of flesh. But I like to keep some things to myself. I'd like to keep my issues strong. It's always darkest before the dawn. And I've been a fool and I've been blind. I can never leave the past behind. I can see no way, I can see no way. I'm always dragging that horse around. All of his questions, such a mournful song. So
30,000 square feet. What would you do with that kind of possibility? Would you strategize your future? Or get lost in the past? Will you fill it with stories? Or use it to empty your mind? Would you explore your spirituality? Or focus on improving your community? Will you use it to work late? Or just work it? Could you create lasting impressions? Or a brief, delicious one? Our vision for the 224? 30,000 square feet of endless possibilities.
Welcome back. We're talking with Megan Fried, who is the co-founder of Fried Marcroft, a firm that specializes in matrimonial and family law here in the Hartford area. In the last segment, we were talking about the holidays and what families go through when they're going through divorce. As you look at your practice in family law here in Connecticut, what do you think the hope is for the future of how things perhaps could create good divorces?
More and more, the longer I practice, the more convinced I am that divorces that are done using alternative dispute resolution wind up with happier moms, dads, and kids overall than do traditional litigated divorces.
And what do those look like?
So there are two main alternative dispute resolution paths that we have in Connecticut. One is mediation, and the other is a collaborative divorce. They're both different. They both have real benefits, and choosing which path to go is really based upon what works best for the family.
So what's mediated?
So mediated is where someone sits in the middle as a neutral and helps the couple reach a decision for themselves and their family. It's really client-driven and client-focused. Sometimes mediators are lawyers. Sometimes mediators are other folks, mental health professionals. A lot of people are trained mediators. In the context of mediation, when I serve as a family mediator, I'm not allowed to give legal advice, but I can give legal information. So I can share with folks the court process that they're interfacing with and help explain that to them. So they're not without anyone with legal information, but neither of them are represented. So mediation has a lot of benefits. It tends to create really some unique solutions to problems that a court wouldn't necessarily think of, and people really can take their time and work things out the way they do. For other couples, mediation really isn't as good a solution as collaborative. Collaborative law is where each party is represented by a lawyer, but everyone is committed to the process of not running to court, that folks sit at the table, often with a coach who helps the conversations move along in a more productive manner, and that's typically a mental health professional. So in cases where one or more party just feels like, yeah, but I want to have someone advocating on my behalf, I really want to know the legal landscape, I'm committed to the process of resolving this out of court, that's the last thing I want, but I just want to really make sure that I have an advocate at the table with me, but one who's also devoted to driving it forward to a resolution.
And what would happen if marriages could end without the law in it?
Oh, wow. So the law is useful because it gives us a framework in which to make decisions. So we certainly don't want a situation where people are left to themselves and can't avail themselves of judges if they really get in a crunch and can't make their own decisions. One of the things that we do in my practice is also help families who are breaking up that and they weren't ever married. And honestly, that's really difficult too, because then you can't call upon the courts to help you divide assets or figure out things like that. They'll help you with children, but you didn't have a legal relationship, and now no one can help you exit the legal relationship. So, but I do think that a less litigious path is for the majority of people. It creates a sense of ownership in the outcome, and it also allows people to choose their own destiny. Even if divorce isn't what they wanted, they have a much more active role in what their future looks like.
So you've been practicing for a while, and you've been involved in this particular area of law. What do you think is the future of how people might move forward in this area of matrimonial and family law?
I think the future is in mediation and collaborative law. One of the benefits of collaborative law and mediation is they allow you to set your own schedule, come up with your agreement, and bring it forth to the court at that point and have your divorce finalized and become part of a court order. It's a way to work outside a finite system of when filing deadlines are, when discovery deadlines are. And also, particularly in the context of collaborative law, I find that it's an opportunity to have a really full and honest and robust, disclosive financial conversation where in the litigative process, documents are exchanged, but people aren't as committed to a forthcoming discussion of finances.
Now, we know that we live in a time where I think lawyers get a bad rap and name, especially when it comes to this idea of divorce, but there is a positive service that's also provided. I wonder, how do you stay in the game of being in this business and maintain healthy relationships yourself?
Oh, that's fair. Right. That's the work-life balance question. Sure. It is. That's a challenge. I have to follow my own advice on that. That is, it's my clients, many of them are going through a really, really rough time. And it's incumbent upon me to make sure that I'm nurturing my own relationship, my own friendships, to make sure that I'm not so immersed in my client's emotional journey that I can't live my own life. So it is a balance.
And clearly, I mean, as a newly married person yourself, it must be hard to come home from work. And your partner also works in the firm.
Right?
So you both are in this area of work. And then how do you maintain your own healthy relationship at the same time when you both have been dealing with divorces all day?
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you that is actually a blessing.
Hmm.
When I come home, my wife, Kristen, already knows what my day was like. There's no recap, right? And I'm not going to say that we never talk about work at home. We're not perfect. We do sometimes do it. But we don't have to explain the day. There's no period of rehash. And so we're really connected, actually, in the fact that we're going through our clients' journey simultaneously. Our firm also works with a team approach, so really everyone is aware of what's going on every file at the same time. And so any major things that have happened in her life, I know about in the course of the day and vice versa. But we do commit to making sure we have dinner and just have dinner.
And so as you look at your journey in this area of law, being in practice with your wife, as you look at the lessons learned, and if you were to lay it out as a manual of lessons learned about marriage, what would some of those nuggets be?
Oh, I love that question. Absolutely, marry your best friend and keep them your best friend. You don't get to change friends. You have to keep focused on that relationship. That's paramount. Vacations. It sounds trite, but it is so important to take yourself outside of your bubble. One of the things that happens is I see long-term relationships where people put their heads down and they just sort of do what they've been doing. They focus on their children or on their careers, the things that happen in all of our lives, but they haven't been on a vacation alone with their spouse in years.
Mm.
And that's really when we reintroduce ourselves to each other.
And that's really good news for a lot of people, to hold on to the friendship, which is the core of the relationship.
It is. You're going to be together after those kids move out of the house, God willing.
Megan Fried, we thank you for your service with Fried Marcroft and your work in Connecticut, making families happier in the long run.
Oh, thank you so much.
Don't get many things right the first time. In fact, I am told that a lot. Now I know all the wrong turns, the stumbles and falls brought me here.
losing friends and I'm chasing sleep. Everybody's worried about me. In too deep, say I'm in too deep. It's been 2 years, I miss my home. But there's a fire burning in my bones. Still believe, yeah, I still believe.
Fill me up, God. Fill me
You have been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.